Water Systems, and she's also been a library commissioner. And to my near left is Alice Maney, who's the leader of the Rondo Library, which I think many of you have read about or heard about recently. That library, it's a set of libraries that she actually manages, includes both the Bookmobile, the Rondo site, the Hanlon Midway site, the Rice Street site, and Marion Park Libraries. I'd like to start today with Taylor Willingham from Texas. We're going to spend about 20 minutes just listening to some of the things she has to say, and then each of the panelists will spend about 5 minutes sort of commenting on her words, and then we're going to open it up for questions. We'd like to finish on time at 4:30. So Taylor, do you mind beginning?
Hi. Let me ask you a question. How many of you would say that you have some kind of civic engagement or community engagement activities going on in your libraries? Well, I'm delighted to be back here. This is my second time to visit this area. I actually had a chance to come back and work with the Hennepin County Library several years ago on a community engagement project called By the People. So it's wonderful to be back here and to be back with my friend Melinda. She and I have worked on some research projects together with the Kettering Foundation, and she gave me a tour of the new Minneapolis Library today, which was a real treat, and it was great to hear. And then tonight I get to go to the Rondo Library. So we have a very, very full day today. But I am delighted to be here. The things that I want to talk to you about, I have some sort of selfish motives for being here, because I, in addition to sharing some ideas that are sort of just half coming together that I'm starting to think about, I want to actually have some time today to sort of pick your brain and get a sense of what things that you're thinking about in terms of civic engagement. Because I think that we're going through a big change. I don't think it surprises anyone that libraries are in a real position of transition and change. I teach change management for the University of Illinois Graduate School of Library and Information Sciences, and every semester the course changes because there are so many other things that we have to confront and that we have to think about. I finally have given up and just give my students a lot of assignments to go out and do research and then come back and tell me where we are. Because it's so difficult to really keep track of. But one of the things that I think is really interesting is not only just the changes that libraries are going through, but also thinking about the work that I've been doing and the consulting I've been doing around community engagement, and how do we find a way for citizens to meaningfully and authentically engage with each other in community problem solving. And then the other piece that is coming together for me is just some personal observations about the world and where I feel like there are some gaps that I think libraries have an appropriate role to fill. So part of it is the trend that's happening, but also part of it is where the vacuum is out there, where libraries could move to really position themselves to create greater value for communities and to help communities really sort through some problems. You know, we have a good foundation to build on. If you think about just over the last, even the last 8 to 10 years, you remember in 1999, 2000, Sarah Long, ALA president, her presidential theme was libraries build communities. And the book that came out after that was all about a librarian at every table. And so how do we get out into the community and have that recognition and that face time out in the community? The following year, ALA President Nancy Cronick's theme was libraries as cornerstones of democracy. So really positioning libraries in a much larger role of what is our role in our country, and what is our role in democracy, and how we preserve that. Recently, and I think this is kind of an exciting transition, thinking in terms of our most recent ALA president, Leslie Berger, thinking about how libraries transform communities. And so I'd really like to think about that transformation process, and not just transformation, but also around how libraries help communities solve problems and take a real leadership role And this is where some of my bias about my observations of the world are going to come in, is that I think there is a real vacuum in our leadership role that tapping into our communities and helping communities to actually solve problems. We have a long history of confronting problems and challenges as libraries, as being problem solvers for the issues that confront us. You know, the Child Internet Protection Act, for example, and some of the work that's been done around the Patriot Act. And even within our own communities, the Somali story that Melinda told me about, am I allowed to tell this story? Is this okay to tell?
Yeah, sure.
that the library has become the gathering place for Somalis because it's the only place where the genders can interact. And so what is the role of the library, and how do you solve those kinds of issues and problems? But I believe that there's an even more proactive role that we can be taking in our communities in helping to actually solve some of the persistent public problems that we confront in our communities. Issues around education, for example. And I think that there are some models out there of libraries that are starting to do a lot of this, and I know a lot of the libraries here are working on that. Issues around healthcare. Even beyond, and this is where I kind of struggle with what that leadership role looks like. Even beyond just providing the information and the kind of workshop and bringing people into the library, how do we actually engage the public in building the capacity to work together to solve those problems? So it's a fine distinction, and it's not quite clearly, I haven't quite clearly figured it out, but I think it's something around building civic capacity. You know, when Robert Putnam's book came out, he talked a lot about social capital and building social capital. And so in 2001, at ALA, he was the president's keynote speaker. Talk a lot about social capital. But I think there's something even beyond that. I think it's something beyond bowling and beyond those kinds of interactions. And I think it really is around the capacity. Do we have the capacity? Do we have the trust within our citizenry to come together? Do we have the processes to come together to solve problems together? We obviously know that the library is the trusted, safe space, but what do we do when we get here? How do we get here? What do our citizens do? How do they begin to engage with each other around solving some of these very, very tough issues? Melinda and I know each other from working on projects around national issues forums, and some of you may have heard of national issues forums, which are focused on bringing citizens together to deliberate. You know, we have lots of places where citizens can get together and they can go before their city council and they can do their two-minute speech. We have lots of debates, our candidates debate. Where do we have a safe place where we can go and say, this is a very large, hairy, complicated problem that we're facing in our community? How do we educate our children? How do we close our achievement gaps in our school? We don't have the answers. We don't even know if we know exactly what the problem is. What is causing the achievement gap? So where do we have that safe place that we can come together and that we can really struggle with each other around those issues? And that's one of the ways in which the National Issues Forums and the work that Melinda and I have been doing together, that's one of the appropriate roles for libraries, is in trying to convene some of those forums. But I think there's still something more. I just have had this nagging feeling in the last 20 years I've been doing this work that there's something more, that there is a leadership role that libraries can take in helping communities to identify what those problems are. Let me give you a couple of examples of where I'm seeing some innovative kinds of things taking place that we could perhaps build on. And I won't talk about the Minneapolis and what you've done, but some right here in your own backyard. Johnson County, Kansas, had an education problem. They had schools that were not working. They had people that weren't able to talk to each other. And so they worked with that community to actually develop a discussion guide for how people could come together and talk about their concerns around education and begin to find some common ground and some trust and build some relationships so they could start working together. maybe they wouldn't agree on everything, but they could at least start working together on some of the education issues. So they brought homeschoolers together with people who had their kids in private school, together with people who were low income and had their kids in public schools, so that they could begin to see the different ways in which people were experiencing this issue, and they could begin to think about how can we solve this problem in a way that is meaningful to all of us, in a way that takes into account our common ground and common interests, you know, as opposed to, I've got mine, I'm fine with mine, I don't need to be concerned about your kids. It's pretty hard to say that when you're sitting right in the room with someone else. So very, very proactive role in doing that. Another library, Lawrence, Kansas, actually has someone on staff whose role is simply to help respond to the community when community issues arise. So when groups of nonprofits come in and say, we're stuck, we can't solve this problem by ourselves, she is the staff person who designs a process for meetings. She sends out all of the invitations. She gets the people in the room. She takes the notes. She sends out the minutes. I mean, she's totally, it's like having, you know, these nonprofits that are so busy doing their work don't always have the ability to do that. And libraries have lots of extra time and staff. So I knew you were going to take me there before I got there. So I had to just had to acknowledge that. So again, some real innovative things that libraries are doing to try and think of how can we be a leader in solving these problems that are vexing in our community. I don't know what the language is around it. I don't know what the metaphor is. I don't know what the theory is behind it. But I just get a sense that there is something that is emerging, that is waiting to emerge. And I think that the public is absolutely demanding it. I've been doing public dialogue and deliberation since 1990. I used to talk about, you know, the importance of bringing people together to deliberate public issues, and people's eyes would glaze over. They still glaze over sometimes. But more often than not now, what I hear is people say, oh my gosh, that's exactly what we need in this country. That is exactly what we need in this country. And this is another role that I think is appropriate for libraries to help out, a very proactive role. I don't get to express my opinion very often because usually I'm moderating a forum and I have to be neutral, so I'm kind of excited about this, actually. I think that there are stories being told about the American public that are not true to what I see when I travel around the country and I talk to people. I think there are stories being told about us as a divided nation that I don't see when I go around and talk to people. Quite often I'll talk to folks, and at this one experience, a guy on the airplane said, I am a diehard Republican. And he just went on and on about how what a firm, I don't know how many adjectives he had before he got to Republican. And he'd also told me that he owns a limo service and he drives for a lot of the politicos in Massachusetts. So I knew he hung out with Democrats. And so I asked him, I said, well, that's really interesting. I said, tell me a little bit about what the conversation sounds like when you're driving for, you know, Senator Kennedy or, you know, going to some of those big fundraising things that you do with him. And he said, well, you know, actually Kennedy and Kerry, and he starts listening to them all. He said, they're really pretty good guys. And he said, I find it actually on such and such issue, I agree with them. And, you know, they have a really good point when it comes to such and such. And he started listing all of these, you know, common ground points. And then he realized what he was saying, and he stopped. And he said, I don't think I'd be a very good candidate for your forums, because I don't guess I know what I think. He said, I'm just a mixed up mess, aren't I? And I think that most of us are. Maybe not mixed up, but, you know, there is some messiness. Because the issues that we're facing in this country and in our communities are difficult. They require difficult decisions. And they require some trade-offs. And they require us to sometimes make decisions when we don't know what the implications of that decision is going to be. And that's a story that's not getting told. The story of where people are actually coming together and working on issues together, that story's not getting told. Which brings up another story issue that I think librarians can help out with, and that is helping to empower our communities to tell the authentic stories of themselves. I kind of put that under the citizen journalism thing, but you know, you've heard about the projects where you give the kids the cameras and you go out and say, take pictures of your community. Tell me what your community looks like. You know, or go out and do a videography, or do a podcast. I know podcasting and YouTubing is... YouTubing. Yeah, I got lots of those new words now, don't we? That's an appropriate role, and to provide the technical equipment and to provide the expertise and the volunteers so that people can tell their own stories. Because that's really what libraries are about. They're about the soul of the community. They're about the community's identities, many identities, and about the stories that get told. But I think there's also... another thing that I would want to challenge us to think about, and this again is where I think that we have a bit of a vacuum in our leadership, and that is those stories of hope and potential, and those stories that tap into our communities when our communities are at their best. And I don't feel like we have enough of that happening, and I feel like libraries and librarians have a really strong role in helping to bring forth those stories that put us at our best, that challenge us to be at our best. I was thinking about what it would look like for a librarian to challenge us to go to the moon. You know, what would the equivalent of that be? You know, where we would rise to the community would rise to that level of expectation. I don't know what that would be, but I think we ought to all think about how do we challenge our communities to go to the moon, and how do we provide the leadership and the support for that to happen. I'm calling all of this, for lack of anything else, I'm calling it civic entrepreneurship. Like I said, I don't know exactly what it looks like, but my sense is from looking at some of the innovative work that probably many people in this room that I don't know about yet, and around the country that librarians are doing. I can't think of anything else to call it except just bold and audacious. And I'm putting it under the rubric of civic entrepreneurship. And if anybody has a good definition and wants to let me know, I'd appreciate it, because that's what my fellowship is this semester, is to study that and to create a course for 14 library schools next semester. So I really do need your help, and I'm sincere when I say, let's muddle through this together and try and figure out how we position ourselves for ahead of the next trend, and to fill in some of the gaps that I think that libraries as public institutions can do in ways that no other institution, or that librarians can do in ways that no other individuals can. So, thank you.
Linda, would you like to go next?
Sure. I got inspired by doing this kind of community engagement work in 1990. I don't know how many of you might remember when the Star Tribune put out a program and a process called Minnesota's Talking. And it engaged people from libraries, the faith community, schools, community education, and a variety of other players. And using the National Issues Forum materials and the study circles model, a lot of people were trained to facilitate these kind of groups and hold them in places all throughout the community. And that's where I met some people in this room who got started doing this work. And it was a big election at that time, and so that was the impetus for people starting to get together and talk. I'm aware of at least one group that's still convening out of those original Minnesota's Talking groups, and that's at the Southwest, Minneapolis Community Education at Southwest High School. They still meet on a quarterly basis at least and do this kind of deliberative discussion. And out of that group came, Get Bob? It's getting to the bottom of the ballot. Mm-hmm. And so they were doing some education around the little minor, so-called minor issues, or the minor elections, like the library board election in Minneapolis, and some other issues that kind of fly under the radar, but they're very important to that community in trying to understand what's behind the issues or behind the candidates there. When I came to Minneapolis Public Library a few years ago to work on our community partnerships, mostly in the business and arts area, I was tapped to look at the civic engagement piece. And we put together a committee of staff who came up with some civic literacy recommendations. And I have those sheets here, and I'll share them with you later. But one of the things was, how do we define this? What do we call this work of bringing people together and having these kinds of discussions? And we met with Harry Boyd over at the Humphrey Institute and talked to them, because he's been doing this work for a long time and is very well known in the civic engagement area, arena. And he likes to use the word public life and using that as a definition, because it takes on so many different nuances, whether it's knowing about election issues and being informed, or helping people become registered voters so that they can take part in that level of our democracy and public life, or whether it is bringing people together and providing a space and the background materials for a discussion, and using the NIF materials, the National Issues Forum materials. It's taking a look at different positions around a topic that the NIF people, the jargon we use is we call them wicked issues, that they're not clear cut. They don't have a one way or another way. There are many ways to look at them. And so in the discussion, you look at a point here on this side and a point there on that and a point there over here. And depending on who's in the room and who comes to the discussion, each group may come up with a different set of parameters around this issue. But what happens in that process is called seeking common ground and looking at where the people who are gathered at that particular moment will agree or agree to disagree around. And in this community, the Minnesota Humanities Commission was very helpful in bringing together people to do training around that. There are a lot of facilitators in the community, so if you're looking for some folks to help you with that process, if you want to use the National Issues Forum, we have them here, but the Humanities Commission is no longer supporting that work. They have refocused their attention on early childhood and K-12 programming and have stopped supporting their adult programming. But if you send me an email, I can help you find some people who are trained around here. At Minneapolis Public Library, we've done our civic engagement work programs around our exhibitions. That's one of the areas I get involved in, is doing exhibitions in collaboration with other partners. The last time the Humanities Commission did a training for National Issues Forum, Colleen Sheehy from the Weissman Art Museum was there to be trained. And they were sponsoring an exhibition on affordable housing and affordable housing design. And out of that, they did a lot of community programs. It was an amazing collaboration. And she talked to me about, let's do one of these national issues forums at one of the public libraries. So we did. We selected Hosmer Library. And because of all the people involved in that exhibit and the programming and the collaboration that we did, we had probably the best possible group for a discussion of this kind. We had people in the affordable housing arena. We had people who were in design. We had people who were in academia. We had local neighborhood folks willing to come together and talk about this issue. It was very diverse, both on racial and ethnic lines, age, as well as income, professionals, and just plain folks. The danger in doing one of those programs with a lot of experts in the room is you want to have your experts on tap, not on top. You don't want them leading the discussion. You want them informing the people, but the discussion is for the regular folk who come and not to be a lecture of any kind. And so there is little danger in involving too many experts in those kinds of discussions. But out of that, we had some amazing recommendations. And you probably read in the news, not only in Minneapolis, but in other communities, the mortgage crisis and the mortgage fraud that's been going on around these issues of people wanting to afford the American dream. And so what we're doing now is some financial literacy programs, especially on the north side of Minneapolis, and working with some nonprofit organizations to come in and do mortgage and credit education right at the library to help put those resources right to the people who could benefit from them. This fall, we're working on an exhibition around issues of homelessness. Two organizations came to me. One, the Jewish Historical Society of the Upper Midwest, is doing an exhibition in partnership with over 100 artists and community organizations. Now, when I say that, get the picture of herding cats. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do. But we're going to have an outstanding exhibit and related programs. The title of the exhibit is I Couldn't Live at Home, and it's looking at the historical perspective of youth who can't live at home for whatever reason, and a home was started in North Minneapolis in 1918 by the Jewish community, and that home is still run as a youth shelter today in that same building by an organization called The Avenues. So we will have an exhibition of material put together by youth and other organizations. Wing Young Huey will be doing some photographs. They're interviewing some of the original residents of that facility and taking pictures of them with the youth who are there currently at that facility. And we have a series of performances, spoken word, dance, film, all kinds of media for performances this fall. Another exhibition that came to us is on another one on homelessness and panhandling, and a documentary photographer needed a public space to get a grant. And so we said we'd host it. He has selected 9 subjects that he is photographing, and he took a long time to find his 9 subjects because it's not a community that's open to this kind of thing. And he asked he paid for their sign. You see these people with their signs. So the commission is to take the sign, put it in a frame, have a graphic designer redesign their sign, and Michael has taken their photograph in the studio. So when you see that photograph, you would not think that that person is homeless. But putting it all together in its context, it makes a bigger statement. And these pieces will rotate throughout our library system during the months of November through January. And you won't know where they will be. They will change location, much as panhandlers do. And there will be a forum in November about this issue. And the subjects are invited to the forum because it is going to be an art opening. And I'm sure many of them have never been to an art opening and been involved in the arts community looking at this issue in such a way. So it's a way for us to be a catalyst for this kind of discussion, but using the arts as a way to frame it. And we'll see what happens. It's a bit of an experiment for us, but I think it'll be very exciting.
I have pictures on my cell phone, if you want to see.
Thomas? Thank you. Your thoughts have been very stimulating as I've been sitting here listening. I'd like to bring us down to what I think are some nitty-gritty, very nitty-gritty issues in public libraries that need to be placed in every agency prior to the public really believing you are willing to be a place for civic engagement and dialogue. It's one thing for public libraries in America to say we want to be a place where you can come and discuss and problem solve and come together. But there are challenges and issues that have to be solved first. The first, I believe, is that libraries have to realize that their staff have to be at every table. And I think at ALA this has been a focus on library work for many years. But unless as administrators, as board, as friends, as supervisors in libraries, you actually put in place ways in which staff can get out on the street and become part of organizations, collaborations, coalitions, civic engagement will not happen. Community needs to see that there are librarians, there are library staff members, library clerks, library paraprofessionals who come to their meetings, come to their events, serve on their boards, lead their strategic plan and be part of their strategic plan. Secondly, I believe that if this happens, the library will have more trust in the community. Until public libraries are seen as being places that community can trust, that they can feel safe, that they can feel they will be heard. We can talk about being places for civic engagement, but it's not going to happen. Thirdly, and I think perhaps most importantly, is how am I treated when I come inside the door? How am I treated when I come to pick up my hold? How am I treated when I have not paid my fine? How am I treated if I should fall asleep? How am I treated if I spill the coffee I bought at the coffee shop? How am I treated, blah, blah, blah. You know all of those situations. How does the staff in this institution that promotes civic engagement treat me when I step in the door just after work or as I'm walking down the street? If they don't treat me well when I come in then, how can I believe they want to be an organization that promotes civic engagement? Another important piece that I think needs to be in place in whatever jurisdiction, whatever library, whatever jurisdiction you are in is, who is there who looks like me? When I come in the library, if there's no one there who looks like me, and they say they are an organization that wants to bring community together, wants community to be really engaged, wants community to share their thoughts, there's no one there who looks like me, is there trust? Fourthly, and by that I mean, is there anyone there working who looks like me, not just sitting in the chair? And further, is there anybody there in responsible positions who looks like me? Then fourth, I believe we have to offer a destination. And by this I mean, we have to have a space for community to come together. And we have to make it reasonable for them to use that space and not rule-bound to use that space, and smile at them when they come to use it and thank them for coming and invite them back. Otherwise, we can talk about, we can have the finest exhibits and we can have the finest place, room, but if we aren't welcoming when they come to use it, they won't come back. And then the fifth thing, and then I'll pass on, but it reminded me so much, Melinda, when you were talking about an exhibit on homelessness. If we have an exhibit in our library about homelessness, but if we stop the homeless when they come in, what does that say about our values? If we talk about being a place where people can really come together, but when we're there, when they're there for any other reason than coming to the exhibit, we are contentious or we are not welcoming, what does that say about who we say we are? And those are just some things that I think in Minnesota public libraries we have to consider. I know that libraries outstate Minnesota don't have any of these problems, but certainly in the metro area. I wanted to give two examples. I remember the day that eDemocracy first called and wanted to meet with staff at the Lexington Library, then the Lexington Library, and I thought, eDemocracy? I've never heard of this group before. eDemocracy. Oh my gosh, it must be something about technology. Ooh. I thought, well, this blend with library services. Well, Rosa Maria and Tim and a couple of other people were persuasive, and so we met. And I heard the story of the goals of eDemocracy. And another staff member listened, and we thought, you know, this is really a good blend with the role of the American Public Library. It is so difficult because of staff, numbers of staff, to always have people in place that can help community members when they come in, get an email, learn how to get an email, contact elected official, a whole menu of things that eDemocracy volunteers assist us doing. And to make the jump from who I am, a person with an MLS, who's a supervising librarian, who has to, you know, hold the line and still has to follow policy and procedure, it took me a little mental jump here to think another group from the community could come in and start playing some of these roles. And we took kind of a leap, and that's been what going on 3 years now that eDemocracy has been at the Lexington Library, now Rondo Library, assisting in a variety of ways around technology and other ways also. And so it just took, I bring that example up because it takes us sometimes to step away from our roles, to open our thinking to accepting community who's willing to be a partner. And then my last example is that as an urban public library, the Rondo Library and many others in St. Paul have had certainly security challenges. And shortly after we opened the new Rondo building, it became pretty apparent we needed to get a grip on things so that our library building would continue to be safe and welcoming. And so we called together a group of community to come to the building for a meeting. Preachers and lay people from the area faith-based organizations. Grandmas who lived on the block, or their daughters and sons who lived down the street, and staff who worked with youth in the community, and said through email and word of mouth that they're struggling. We need to get a grip on our community. We need to be sure this is a safe place. And it's the people on the street in the neighborhood who can take back their community. So about 30 people came to this meeting. Now, it wasn't the most perfect meeting. The agenda wasn't too clear. The police wanted to talk more than the neighbors, and we had to kind of work on that. And then the neighbors wanted to be louder than the police and the librarians. And so it was really kind of a picture of America there, of different groups in this room all wanting to be louder than the other. But by the end of the meeting, I think what we discovered was that everybody was there for the same purpose, and that was to make that library and that neighborhood safer and more welcoming than it had been. Now, I think those kinds of situations are examples of some civic dialogue and civic entrepreneurship that are a little different than just inviting a group in to do a display or to do a program. And so I think I wanted to bring those two examples up because I think they're useful as we all think about our different roles in whatever library systems in Minnesota we have.
My name is Susan Nanitz. I'm the director of the Ramsey County Library, and I think Ramsey County is sort of in the beginning of their civic engagement journey. So I just want to tell you how we've gotten where we are. Every year, after 2003, the library was cut so severely, we really have almost no resources for both programming and outreach. Almost all the resources we get to do those kinds of activities comes from our friends group. And we've made the decision to take an annual theme that guides our programs, our outreach, our staff development, and our special collection purchasing. And we pick themes that really add value to the organization and have a lasting impression. Knowing that the money that you spent that year is going to go away and go on to something new, we really want an activity that provides major organizational learning. And I think the first year, 2 years of doing this have been really successful. We've had some great themes. So we started by searching for what is the theme going to be for 2008. And I had an interesting experience where I was meeting with my public relations director, who is also trying to develop an advocacy plan for the library, something you see at every single conference. We really need to create more grassroots support of our library system. And then it was followed by, it's nice to have a coffee shop in your library, because a lot happens in the coffee shop. I was sitting in the coffee shop and I ran into a group of faculty I had worked with in a previous job who were all doing civic engagement projects and meeting someone from the Humphrey Institute. And this gentleman from the Humphrey Institute said, you know, the library really needs to take on civic engagement. And so I spent some time talking to him and then talking to staff, and we decided that our next year theme for programming outreach, special collections buying, and staff development really is going to be civic engagement. Very concretely, Dennis Donovan is a gentleman we've been working with the Humphrey Institute. He's going to come out on September 27th at the library in Maplewood. We've invited a large group of community leaders, teachers, students, sort of a cross-section, we'll see who comes, to come and through a facilitated process talk about the library's role in civic engagement and what community means in libraries. I don't know how this will work. We're very excited about it, and our hope is that the findings will not only potentially provide us a group of citizens who will help us begin this process, but also give us a lot of ideas about where we can begin. I have to say that a lot of the people on the list are potential partners that we saw, people like, you know, the Cable Commission and arts groups and some of the other groups that are in the community that we could potentially see partnerships around a set of activities. Very concrete example. I want to step back though and sort of change the subject a little bit, because I've been trying to spend a lot of time thinking about advocacy, and it's an interesting topic, and all my reading on civic engagement is in some ways creating a dilemma within my mind that I just wanted to share with you that you've sort of brushed on. If you look at a book like Bowling Alone, and it talks about why people are less engaged, I think one thing it didn't hit hard enough on is sort of the increasing professionalization of many activities, including libraries. And as public service organizations become more professionalized, they almost remove themselves from, I think, the grassroots kind of input that you get. If you look at the way the library system in suburban Ramsey County was created, it was women's clubs who were putting together groups of books and finding funds for bookmobiles. And it's really interesting because as we professionalize, we move more and more away from the grassroots. We're in the process of working with a Friends group that's 30 years old, terrific people. They've traditionally been volunteers. More and more, we're moving it into a fundraising capacity. But again, sort of that high-touch, intimate relationship you have with your patron becomes farther and more distant. And it's funny, because as a professional, I have one more example. More and more, we're moving away from citizen library boards. I think this is, we're going to the political group being the governing board, and the citizen group that has been traditionally the library board seems to be disappearing, hopefully not too fast. I really like my library board. But to me, it's another example of this professionalization that's removing us from any grassroots support. And then at the same time, we're coming up with all these activities of how do we bring people in? In the past 3 years, we've created a massive volunteer program. It has raised the grassroots support for the library immensely. And we're setting up activities that are trying to get people involved emotionally up in the ways that they had been 50 years ago. I was so intrigued by your comments about having citizens come in and talk about the library. And one of the things I'd like to do is put the capital E on engage and take it very narrowly to the library and just sort of put out to you, how can your citizens be more engaged in what you do every day? And I think there will be tremendous payoff in support and in quality of service in the long run if we can recommit to sort of that grassroots service. I'm going to cough now. So I'll leave it at that.
question for?
Please.
Since you're sort of in charge of this and you're coughing, shall we step forward and say, are there questions?
Please.
Emma, do you have a brief list of what we need for some of these? Are you missing one?
Yes, add it now. Number 6 is?
I speak my language.
Very good. Very good. And I'm thinking, taking that a step farther might be, is your website one I can get into? Or can I read your brochures in your half an hour? Or is your phone line? I just have to tell you this. When the Rhonda building opened, and many of you have phone lines in other languages, if you call the Rhonda building, it says, I think it's like this. For Spanish, press 1. For Somali, press 2. For Hmong, press 3. And for English, press 4. And I've had about 8 phone calls since the building opened. Why did you put English in the 4th place? And the answer is, you know, we're a major focus of that particular
branch. Well, why is Somali,
it's outreach.
Why is Somali in English and Spanish in English?
I'm sorry, what?
Why is Somali said in English and Spanish said in English?
Oh, they're said in the original languages. Oh. I'm just, because I don't, my Somali is really bad. But why did you put English 4th? We're English speakers and we want ours to be first in line. Because we're making a statement that if the focus of our library is reaching out into the community, at least for a few months, we ought to be able to have English 4th place on that one. Okay. Just a thought. To do more often means you have to rely more on community-based organizations to come in and do it for you. So, for example, there is certainly no way that at St. Paul Public we would be able to hire people to teach English language classes in our buildings, probably. But because of our partnership with the Minnesota Literacy Council, they are able to use us as a venue because, as I said before, we had a space for them to be a gathering spot. I'm looking at the Sunray Library, which is undergoing a bit of a change to embrace a new program to make their library more welcoming, and a smaller piece of that has to do with being a place where people can come in and attend classes around workforce and employment skills. And through an LSTA grant, they have, Debbie here can probably speak a little much better about it than I, because she's managing that program, but have fax machines for the public, have laptops that people could take around in the building to actually sit comfortably and work on a resume, those kinds of things. Well, along with that is who teaches those workforce classes in our building? Is it that LifeTrack Resources or another Ramsey County program would teach those classes? We just don't have the staff to be able to teach all those classes ourselves. But because we are a place and we're willing to have some technology in place for a community-based organization to use it, then we can also benefit from the expertise of our partners.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Because there's an interesting model that I've been kind of thinking about. Have y'all read the Long Tail by Chris Anderson? It talks about why the business of selling, you can now sell less, more of less, and how markets have now opened up. He talks about the professionalization versus the amateur. So I was really fascinated by your conversation. And I think it ties into your question. There's a couple of examples in there. One is around, what is it when you look at the stars?
Astronomy.
Thank you. how the important role that amateur astronomers play in tracking things that you don't normally see, that, you know, the professionals can only see so much, they can only sit there and look so much. So they really rely on the amateurs. And I know that University of Texas, Hook 'em Horns, by the way, that they rely on a lot of amateur astronomers in the Central Texas region to provide input to them. You think about things like the open source software development process. You look at how Wikipedia has evolved. What is there in those models that we can begin to learn and apply in our own organizations and ultimately in our democracy? And I'm just kind of intrigued by that whole notion of the professionalization versus the amateurs, and yet at the same time we're struggling with, we don't have enough staff. Obviously we can't just open source the library. Somebody's got to be responsible. We are public institutions. But what are there aspects of that we can start to integrate? And you've got some good examples, you know, community partners, but can we push that envelope in some ways? I don't know.
You know, this is sort of an odd example, but one of the things I love that's why not a Hennepin is their readers advisory web pages allows people to write in their own readers advisory. And to me, it's an interesting kind of civic engagement. It's an engagement with the library. It's a remote engagement, but they're becoming part of the library's workforce in some ways by providing that reader's advisory. And I love that little example because I just really think it is an example of how you can sort of spread the word and engage people. It's a capital E of engage. And it's very consistent with all the library movement.
Yeah, a couple of examples. One that didn't get very far in Minneapolis libraries last year and a half ago when I got on board, and myself and other board members, that we had to figure out better how to use technology and form this great advisory committee, which met once and then we didn't get our budget price and said it didn't meet again. But one of the most interesting things that came out of that was the comment from the CIO of St. Thomas College. And he went around the table and asked what you would be looking at, and his response was, figure out how to use social networks and tell us.
Right.
Because they didn't know how in their college. And I think the whole social network web 2.0 thing is something that really can work on an engagement. E-democracy is a small piece of that. Another example from Minneapolis libraries, a previous web person had this theory that I had this theory he worked by asking forgiveness, not permission. And he sold this great idea called Radical Trust. And we let teenagers review their own books online.
But the lemma is it requires us professionals to give up power. And it's an interesting dilemma.
It's the same kind of power that has to be given up if we say that we want staff who reflect the communities and not all people in this room. Maintaining the status quo is very easy to. But I really believe that we won't be able to fully engage with our communities unless we truly, truly reflect them.
Another great idea I've heard out of Minneapolis is they're giving branch managers a small $1,000 pool whose purpose is to participate in the community. So the branch manager can join the Rotary so that they can be in the parade, so that they can set up tables at the community festival. And you know what? We don't provide any resources to do that. Sometimes we have the expectation people do it anyway. But the truth is they're doing it overtime, unpaid. And a lot of times it's not getting done. Again, though, we call the library in Ramsey County the library. So if we want staff to think globally, you are the library. You're not site. But our patrons are looking at that city library, and they're engaged at that local level. They don't know who the Ramsey County Library is. They think it's
yeah.
Hall.
Yes.
But it's an interesting one.
I'll speak to a little bit to that. Our librarians are empowered to create these community connection plans and also figure out programming. Adam, who's here, Adam Olson from our friends, with our current situation, did a lot of studying of the demographics of the neighborhoods surrounding each of our libraries. And that information was compiled in a fantastic report. The partnership staff team, were able to disseminate that information to the different branch libraries so that those librarians have that information about who's in their neighborhood so they can be relevant in their community connections and in their programming. We'll be going out to talk with various libraries to help them and provide some technical assistance to help them make those connections with the system-wide partnerships and connections that the community partnership staff have created to help bring some of those resources down to that branch level and help them cultivate those relationships and partnerships. And you have a library in Northeast Minneapolis, which is a thriving arts community. Well, that librarian has her membership on the Chamber of Commerce, but also in the Northeast Minneapolis Arts Association. And then the Pierre Botneau Library was the site for the Art of World tour. So it's how to become part of the fabric of that community so that people feel that you are engaged, that you're stepping up to the plate and being part of the community, and your staff are going to the meetings or inviting the small business community out to Washburn Library to find out about our databases. You do a class on databases, nobody will come. But if you come to them, to their meeting at their level, and make it something compelling and exciting, as we have this fantastic product for you that'll help you figure out where you're going to locate your yoga studio. Should it be on Lindale Avenue or should it be on Hennepin Avenue? And by looking at the demographics, you can figure out the best place to be. But you're not going to be able to know how to navigate those pesky databases without somebody being the navigator for you, and that's where we come in. And I'm sure you all have thousands of examples and are doing the same wonderful work we're all doing together, but we don't talk about it, and we don't tell the community that this is what we're doing and this is a place where it happens. When I'm pitching our resources, our asset, to a potential partner, the thing that we have to bring to the plate is we are the place that everybody comes to. No one else can say that. The schools are segmented by age. There are other players in the community. They're not open to everybody, that the same way libraries are. And I think that's our ace in the hole, and that's our thing that we bring, and the facilities and the other resources and the trained staff that we have. I mean, we have a lot to put on the table, and it's time to toot our horn and show that.
Can I ask a question? I'm intrigued by the notion of giving up power. And one of the things that I think is so interesting is that, I mean, let's face it, a lot of libraries are coming under attack now. And that may be part of the rationalization for professionalization that nobody else can do this, you know. Google cannot do what we do. So I'm just kind of curious about how we might think differently about, I mean, it's hard to hold those two things in your head at the same time. They're in conflict. Can we reframe this idea of giving up power, and can we give it a different metaphor or another theory that also takes into account the fact that some people are naive and don't understand what we do, and we are trying to remain relevant. So what is the reframing, perhaps, that we could, I just want to throw that out.
Yeah, and also, I was kind of using a little the power to the people. And I'm also in partnerships, and the work I've done and what I've been reading, especially the way things are going on, you really have to partner and everything you do in order to make it work at all. And so in many things, what we've got in our system, we have the 55,000 people working. In addition to an internal group, we formed an external group of people from key organizations outside the system. Sharon L. Anderson from the Humphrey Institute is getting a group of people together to host a meeting next Wednesday with some people from St. Paul, and of some other institutions, and people who are working with organizations serving the tsunami of baby boomers. And it's just to see who has what resources and how we can work together, because you can't do it alone. Or our teen advisory group for the web has a group of teens, but there's also another group of external people in the field, someone from the health field, someone from a parent group, from other groups, so that it's done in that framework. And that's really helped us to have that umbrella group, because then if the commissioner says, you know, you've got bad things on the team website, you can go back and say, well, this health person said that little kids have to know the truth about tattooing. They have to know the truth about sex education. They have to know the truth about it. So I'm convinced that the more groups that you can partnership with that affect whatever the topic is, the more successful you're going to be.
Summer at St. Paul was funded by community money, and it was part of Mayor Coleman's Second Shift initiative. And I think Karen Peterson, our youth services coordinator, maybe can speak to that too. But I know that, for example, this circulator bus stopped outside the Arlington Hills Library to pick up youth, to take them, I believe, to rec centers and to other community-based organizations that were there were youth, was summer youth programming. I think it was wonderful and it was challenging. I mean, I've heard both sides of that whenever you get that many youth on a bus traveling around the city. That sounds like fun, right? And there were challenges, but I think it was a beginning step into thinking, how do we get people from one location to another for free?
I've been thinking about your, how do you reframe, and I don't have any kind of an answer for it, but it seems as if there are sort of two questions. The dealing with collaboration is easier, I think, because you can do that in your professional self. You can see the value of bringing other people in. The more difficult part is seeing your professional self as a different person who is a person of color or is a person who speaks different languages, which is a much more difficult, frightening consideration. And I think that there are two questions that have to go side by side, because to have the full conversation, you're going to need people at the table who don't look like us.
Check out the room.
You know, I know power is a word that frightens people, but I think we should be honest sometimes about our reluctance. I think, though, you said the term that probably it needs to be reframed by, what we're all trying to achieve here is relevance.